as sure as if. No, not yet. There will be slight changes to the agenda for today. But if you look at the time, it's almost 9:30. And by 9:30, I was supposed to be finishing my summary of yesterday's discussions. But now, we thought we would start with the first presenter, the Human Rights Commission. So anyway, the summary is for the purpose of us as members. So we can always do it last or whenever. So you say Judith is not yet in, but it's still time for her. She must be still coming along.
I was like,
Morning once again. Thank you that has arrived from the Human Rights Commission. He is on time. I don't know, should we give you 1 minute to settle? Are you settled? Can we start? Over to you. Members, do you all have the hard copy of the presentation? You do? Okay, then we can start, Judith.
Good morning to everyone, and thank you very much for this invitation. In the past, the Human Rights Commission was quite a regular visitor to the Joint Monitoring Committee on Women, Children, and Persons with Disabilities, and therefore it's certainly not unfamiliar for us to be sitting here and briefing the committee, which has undergone a name change and now has a department. And we would really like to wish this committee all the best in terms of the work that it does. It is certainly, from the Human Rights Commission's point of view, a very important committee. I think a committee where there are many synergies and many nexuses between the work that the Commission does and the work of this committee. And as one of the state institutions supporting constitutional democracy, we certainly look forward to having a relationship with this committee as we move forward and in the work that the committee does. So thank you very much for this invite. It certainly is an invite which the Commission truly does welcome. Just, I know that I'm sitting here today and we've got some, I see a lot of new faces before me, new members of Parliament, some old faces as well. And in a sense then, because it's a new committee and one has to speak to the committee, one doesn't really know where to pitch what one is going to say. So this morning we've got 30 minutes. It's a very short period. We really are just going to be giving you a smattering of some of the issues around international human rights interests. I hope, though, by the end of the 30 minutes, we would have at least stimulated an interest amongst committee members in this area. We'll be introducing you to about 9 treaty bodies. Each of these treaty bodies, we could come here and spend a whole day, or even 3 days, speaking to you about them. So please be aware of that. We will leave some materials behind. And if in the future the committee would like us to return to speak to you about a particular treaty body or a particular aspect, we would certainly welcome that invitation. Just before I begin, let me introduce myself and also my colleagues who are with me. My name is Judith Cohen. I am the head of the Parliamentary and International Affairs Program at the South African Human Rights Commission. This program is one of 9 programs which the Commission has. Also got an education program, legal program, information communications program, and then all your programs which keep the Commission opening its doors every day, like finance, admin, HR, and those kinds of programs. So I'm just one of 9 programs as well sitting before you today. So even in terms of the Human Rights Commission, you're seeing a very small sliver of the Commission here today. We're a very small program. We are based down here just across the road from Parliament, so it's not far for us to come to visit the committee. And I have 2 of our researchers with us today, Fadla Adams and also Tasneem Steris. And behind at the back, you'll see we've got Margot, Caitlin, and Catherine, who are all visiting us from abroad. The Commission attracts some very esteemed students and graduates to come and do work at the Commission with us. To get going then, as I was driving here in the car, I heard that this morning on the radio they're having a debate. Does South Africa have the best constitution in the world, or should we have the best constitution for South Africa? And I had a small chuckle as I heard that, because that was where I wanted to begin this morning. And that is to say that something one notices in South Africa when we speak about human rights, we always begin with our constitution. I think, though, it's because we as South Africans are so incredibly proud of our constitution. It's far more than just a constitution. It's far more than just writing on paper. It truly is a symbol for us in terms of where we've come from. It's a symbol of unity. It's a symbol of what we have overcome. And we just have this incredible pride in our Constitution and just the manner in which the Constitution was written, in which it was negotiated, and how we landed up with this incredible document. And it is an incredible document for so many reasons. And I think that is why when we speak about human rights and we speak about the rights of the child, for example, we will say Section 28 of the Constitution says. If you travel elsewhere in the world, you will notice that when you engage, people will begin with the Convention on the Rights of the Child says, and only after that do they move on to what it is, okay, that their own constitution says. So I think it's because in South Africa we have a bit of a fixation with our constitution, which certainly is a good thing. But there is also, and often we forget, that there is this whole body of law out there, which is made up of many, many international agreements, instruments, treaties, many of which, and this is a fascinating area which could deserve a whole nother day, many of which South Africa stimulated the development of many of these treaties. The first treaty body to be established was the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. That treaty body was established in 1964. And I think it's very clear and very obvious to us all in the room why that convention was so important and why at that time it was so important, because of apartheid, because of what was happening in South Africa. We forget as well when we speak about these treaty bodies that, for example, the Convention Against Torture, some writers claim that the final drafting, there were quite a few stumbling blocks whilst they were drafting that convention, and this got bogged down in the whole slow UN system. It was the death of Steve Biko in South Africa that put the Convention Against Torture firmly back onto the agenda, that we needed that convention, that we needed to set international norms and standards for ourselves. So in terms of South Africa, because of our past, we also occupy a very special place on the international arena in terms of being a catalyst for a lot of the international law. And I think we need to remember that when we look at what our role is now, post-1994, when we have been now embraced by the international community, what our role is now, and for us to actually understand how the eyes of the world, in a sense, they do look at South Africa, because we have played such an important role in ensuring that we've got so many of these international treaties. The other one I must mention quickly as well is also the International Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability. I think there again, as South Africans, we need to be enormously proud of the role that we have played in that convention, in the drafting of that convention. Many, many South Africans, particularly from the unit in the presidency and other South Africans, were deeply involved in the drafting and the crafting of that convention. The eyes of the world will now also be upon us to see what it is, how we take that convention and how we use it in South Africa to support a lot of the much-needed work that still needs to be done around disability in this country. The same goes for there's now an optional protocol to the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. It will be opening for signature on the 24th of September, Heritage Day in New York. There's going to be a big ceremony. South Africa, again, deeply involved behind the scene in the debates. In fact, South Africa even argued that new international instrument is not strong enough, it does not have enough force. They would have liked to have seen actually a stronger instrument being put on the table. The optional protocol will allow individuals and countries to take complaints to the UN system. So again there, we will come across some of the issues, and I'm just going to try and show just very briefly some of the nexuses between this great body of international law, and I will look more today at the UN system, the United Nations system, that's the international system, which has been around for a lot longer, than the African system, which is still very new. But that could also deserve another whole debate. I will touch on it briefly, though, because that is also fascinating. A lot of the African instruments can actually be considered as more progressive than the international instruments. So that's also another whole fascinating area in terms of our regional human rights system. The slides I'm going to run through, we are going to hand them out to you. So if you want, you can just sit and you can relax, and you will have these notes to take back with you. Okay, so I've already mentioned that the United Nations, okay, oversees a number of the international treaty bodies, okay. Governments then sign these international treaty bodies, and it sends a strong message to the world about that country's commitment to human rights. Very symbolic that a country actually signs these instruments, even though we've got the best constitution in the world or the best constitution for South Africa, whichever one you want to say, it's still very important that as a country we send out a strong signal to the world that we do, in fact, support these international instruments that set out human rights. In terms of, though, once you've signed these international instruments, you are expected to then report on a regular basis to the committees that get formed under each of the treaty bodies. We don't have enough time to go into today, but generally how it works is usually plus minus about a year after you've signed, your first report is expected, okay? And then depending on the treaty body, many of them different, anywhere between every 2 and 5 years, okay, one is expected to give a treaty, a report. Big debates as to whether it's too often, whether the UN systems can cope with all these reports which are coming through, but that is typically in terms of how it is, okay? Just to run through, I've already mentioned quite a lot of these. You've got the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights that South Africa has signed. In fact, it was around June this year, even though we signed it, I think, in about 1994, it was only in June this year that South Africa submitted its first report to the committee. This is the Human Rights Committee, not to be confused with the Human Rights Council, which is a political body. This is the Human Rights Committee. South Africa submitted its first report. And just out of interest, the Deputy Chairperson from the Human Rights Commission, Dr. Zonke Majidina, she sits on this treaty body committee in Geneva. So she's often not at her office for 6 weeks at a time because she's sitting on this committee, and she was nominated by the South African government to sit there. There's an International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. For South Africa, Nelson Mandela signed this covenant on his first visit to New York in 1994, his first visit to the UN in New York. South Africa, though, is yet to ratify it. This is certainly an issue, I think, for this committee to be aware of. And with the optional protocol opening for signature now in September, there is a big campaign going on which parliamentarians may become aware of amongst civil society, being led by organizations such as the Black Sash, the National People's Health Movement, amongst others, to really try and bring pressure to bear to ratify this covenant. And as the Human Rights Commission, we certainly support that we need to ensure that we actually ratify. Just so that you understand, when one signs one of these covenants, then that is an indication that you will then ratify it at a later stage. It's only at ratification that you become accountable under the covenant, and that you have to begin reporting. And many people just can't understand why South Africa, with this incredible constitution with justiciable economic and social rights, why we have not ratified this covenant. And it certainly is an issue which needs to be sorted out. Important for this committee because it's that covenant which, for example, touches on, for example, your right to health, your right to education, your right to social security. And when you're dealing with your vulnerable groups, such as women, such as children, such as persons with disability, those are the people who will be bearing the brunt of it if government does not get it right to ensure that the laws that we have, the grants that we have, if we do not get it to those people who are entitled to those benefits, okay, and many of those are protected under this covenant. So one certainly for this committee to keep an eye on. International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. It was a very historical event in August 2007, when South Africa appeared for the first time before this committee. Can you imagine that? A convention where really the impetus of it came because of apartheid. And yeah, we as South Africa now appear before this committee for the first time in August 2007. And I think very important, because also quite ironic, when South Africa appeared before that committee said to South Africa, remember this was August 2007, please share with us the good work that you have been doing around xenophobia. Please share it with us so that we can regard it as an example of best practice. And what happened May 2008, the country was alight with xenophobic violence across the country. So quite ironic, yes, we were doing so much work in South Africa, yet we still had the xenophobic violence last year. The next one, Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. I see we've got the Gender Commission sitting here in full force. I'm sure they will have a lot more to say about this convention as well. Very important convention for this committee to keep an eye on, to see where we are in terms of our reporting status. Certainly it goes to the core of this committee's work. The Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment. And also the optional protocol. I think, again, not on the face of it, I'm sure many of you are going, why on earth is she telling us about this convention? How can it possibly be important to us, okay? Why it could potentially be important to you is, one, South Africa, we still need to criminalize torture on our statute books. We haven't done that. The person is tortured, you have to use common assault, culpable homicide, assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm. We do not have a crime called torture in this country, and in terms of this convention, we're required to do that. I think of more interest, though, to this committee is the optional protocol, okay, which, again, South Africa has signed, which says it agrees with it, but hasn't ratified, which means it's not bound by it. But in terms of that optional protocol, what that optional protocol seeks to do is to set up what they call a national preventative mechanism. This is an issue of you don't wait for torture to happen and then deal with it. And it recognizes that in any place where a person is deprived of their liberty against their will, where they have not had a say in being deprived of their liberty, that there's always the potential for torture to occur. Torture doesn't only occur, you know, in that darkened cell in the corner, you know, with that ugly man with the pliers. That's not torture. Torture is a lot more sophisticated. It's not just torture. It's also forms of cruel, of inhuman treatment and punishment. So far wider, okay? And again, I think the interaction between this committee and that optional protocol, it is an area where the commission is doing quite a lot of work, is that it's all places where people are deprived of their liberty. So if you think children, for example, places of safety, or any place where a child is kept in institutional care by a court order could fall into this category, okay? It could include, for example, this committee, I'm thinking youth. Who is sitting in our prisons? Between 18 and 25, they would be your largest population in the prisons, okay? Yes, we've got the judicial inspectorate, okay, but their mandate is slightly different from what a national preventative mechanism would be. I was thinking as well, youth, for example, as we know, we have an enormous drug problem amongst our youth in this country, particularly for those of us who are from the Western Cape. There's this drug called TUC. It is ravaging our communities, okay? You have parents who will go to great lengths, okay, to try and ensure that their children are removed from the drug, okay, and that they're rehabilitated. Those kinds of places, there's a place up in the Northern Cape called Noport. It's hit the media a number of times. The commission has been involved in there a number of times, the kind of treatment that is given there. That is youth going to those kinds of places. So this committee, again, would be very, very interested. In terms of persons with disability, we have places of institutional care in this country, for people with psychiatric disabilities, also people with intellectual disabilities. We know particularly people with intellectual disabilities are often the most vulnerable. Often they can't even vocalize the forms of inhuman treatment that they may be subjected to. Very important that in South Africa we set up a national preventative mechanism. We want to prevent torture before it happens and ensure that we can be a society which is free from torture. There's also the convention, the next convention on the rights of the child, okay? The most signed convention in the world, except for United States, is yet to ratify it. There's also the International Convention on the Protection of Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families. That's a relatively new convention, one which South Africa still needs to sign and ratify. Okay, but I think possibly important for this committee as well, sometimes we have a large migrant community or large community of migrant workers who come to South Africa, particularly on our mines, okay? And this convention also speaks about their families and the rights that their families should have. So often that could be women, that could be children. So as you can see, this committee's got a large task ahead of it in terms of really promoting the international law. There's also, I've already mentioned, the Disability Convention, and then there's also the Convention for the Protection of All Persons from Enforced Disappearances. That's also a very new convention, the one on enforced disappearances. South Africa still needs to also sign and ratify that one. In terms of the Disability Convention, we have both signed and ratified. These are just the slides. I've just indicated which ones we've ratified there. You will get these. These are the ones you still need to ratify. I've mentioned those already quite a few times, okay? In terms of our reporting status, I think this is something this committee should be aware of. South Africa could be doing better. We really, really, really could. I think we're sitting at a sort of cusp. No, and I think during this sort of this parliamentary term, and I think for this committee, it's going to be important. One can certainly understand that as South Africa, we had never done this reporting before. So I think we really need to ask questions in terms of those who are responsible for reporting. Have they really set themselves up? Have they received the training? So this really isn't. This is something new for South Africa doing this. Reporting. In terms of the, I've already mentioned International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, we ratified that almost 15 years ago, but only sent the report now, this year, okay? There are many countries a lot worse than us, okay? But I do think that as South Africa, given who we are, given our aspirations, given how serious and committed we are about human rights culture, I think we should be pushing ourselves to do a lot better. The International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, we appeared before that committee. We were supposed to submit just a short report a year later on a few aspects which the committee was concerned about. And as far as we know, government has not submitted a report. But as a commission, we do intend submitting a report. Again, Convention Against Torture, we also appeared a while back and were asked to submit a report within a year, which South Africa has not done. Convention on the Rights of the Child, we could be doing a lot better. Our second and third reports are now outstanding. For a long time, we've heard that it's on its way. And just to say as well, now that we have ratified the Disability Convention, that treaty body committee now has to get up and running. But in terms of that convention, it will mean that come May 2010, we ought to be submitting our first report. And the question is, will we be ready to submit the first report? And then also one looks at the CADA asthma report, the report of the independent panel of experts. Some of the questions I think this committee should be engaging in as well is, what will be the role of this committee in terms of those reports? Will the committee be engaging with those reports? So a lot of work, a lot of questions, I think, for this committee moving forward. This was just in one line telling you about each of those committees, and I'm sure my time must be running out. There is just one last issue I'd really like to get to, and then I can answer questions. And that is, okay, I've touched on some of the roles, possibly for parliamentary committee ratification. This is if we were to submit a report as well, I would just leave it possibly some of the kinds of activities a parliamentary committee could be engaged in if a report were to go to Geneva, in terms of the drafting process, what it is that one could do at a domestic level, yeah, and then when the report is actually heard in Geneva, what it is that as a parliamentary committee, what could be done, and then also after the treaty body system. Just a few notes on the African regional system. I really do wish we had more time, because I think it's very important that as one of the more dominant countries on the African continent, that as South Africa we should really take these obligations very seriously. And even though it's still a very young system, we really need to support the system. We need to ensure that it works. It becomes very important that we ensure that government submits reports to the African Commission, and that we engage in all those processes at a regional level to really support it. And I think particularly when you attend meetings of the African Commission, many other African countries, particularly in the Southern African region, they really look to South Africa as taking the lead. Other countries out there, they really do look up to South Africa, and I think that really does put an enormous responsibility on our shoulders in this era. There's also, of course, the African Charter on the Rights and the Welfare of the Child. I just wanted to end off very quickly, just to share with this committee, because this is something quite new, and that is a process called the Universal Periodic Review, or UPR. It's a new mechanism, okay, which has been established by the Human Rights Council. And its aim is to improve the human rights situation on the ground in all countries. It's a peer review mechanism. It's very new. The first countries to be reviewed were reviewed in April last year. They drew lots to see who the first countries would be, and South Africa was one of the first countries to go before the Universal Periodic Review process. I think, again, there was some disappointment in that South Africa did not submit to the council a written report prior to appearing before the council. It is optional, but let's put it this way, all other countries, except for some small islands and the name has now left my head off the coast of Africa, except for some very, very small island country, South Africa is the only country thus far which has not submitted a written report prior to appearing before the council. On the day, though, of the actual UPR, South Africa, a delegation did appear. Again, what distinguished South Africa from many other countries is that most of the other countries that have appeared before the Human Rights Council for the UPR process has brought a very large, strong home delegation of very senior ministers and officials to answer the questions. When South Africa appeared, it was a Geneva-based delegation. I think there was one person from Home Affairs who flew over for it. And I think if you want, you can go onto the UN website and one can even download. It was podcasted, and you can actually watch that whole interactive session which South Africa had. And certainly one could pick up that on some of the questions, possibly I think better answers could have been given, and South Africa could have looked better if we had sort of people sort of fresh from Pretoria who were like the most up-to-date people to actually be there. So, but also again, we were one of the first countries. It's a new system. You know, the UN still trying to sort of work out that system. So certainly moving forward, we need to look at the system. In terms of, though, there were many recommendations that were made, and I think we're going to be leaving those recommendations for this committee as well. So a lot of those recommendations that were made will go to the heart of the work, again, of this committee. A lot of issues around gender-based violence and what is South Africa doing and the rate of gender-based violence in this country, what it is that we need to do. Issues around sexual violence, particularly violence against women and children. Many, many gender issues came up in UPR. Issues around education of children. One of the ones we don't have up there is the whole issue of corporal punishment, violence against children, a very, very contentious issue. We'll be interested to see how this committee grapples with that issue as we move forward. So that is the UPR system, and I think we will certainly appear again within 4 years' time before the Human Rights Council, and South Africa will be expected to report back in terms of these recommendations, in terms of what it is that we have done. And I think as this committee, particularly in terms of the oversight role which the committee could play, the committee could certainly, as a new committee, certainly think about how it would position itself in terms of some of these international obligations and in terms of the kind of active role that it will play. But again, I think what is most important, you know, often people just think that international law, you know, is this very sexy, interesting stuff which happens off in Geneva, and everyone wants to get involved in it because maybe you'll get a trip to Geneva and go see Mont Blanc. Certainly, at the Commission, it's not about that at all. The international law is about how we strengthen human rights on the ground, in our townships, out in your deep rural areas. It's got nothing really about in terms of looking good, ticking boxes at that international level. It's how we use it as a powerful, effective tool at a domestic level to ensure, for example, that there are fewer women who are victims of domestic violence, that there are young men who are addicted to drugs, who are not tortured in these sort of almost kangaroo rehab places. And I think this committee could really take on this role to really position itself in terms of how do you exercise that oversight role, who do you call to engage with to find out what they are doing and what they could do more to really make a difference to people's lives in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We will. Thanks for the presentation. You know, sometimes one wonders that somewhere, sometime you become very unpopular. And as parliament or as a committee, you should be one of the tools that we are using to make sure that people are afforded their grants, their health, their basic rights, and so forth. But also, I think you are not very known and not very visible also. Maybe we also need to find a way of, you know, popularizing you people. But I still think you are, at least you are better than the places like the Equality Courts. People sometimes do tend to to come to you rather than the Equality Court. But also, I would just want to, I'm very interested when you talk about torture, that torture doesn't happen. It's, you know, sort of a process. Would you say, as human rights, that the issue of circumcision, would it fall under torture? Especially taking the issue that one saw on the news last night, that little boy, would it fall under torture? I mean, such things, though they happen under the umbrella of culture, but would such things be torture? But let me just open up for questions, clarity to members. Let's have Robinson, 2, 3, three hands now, 4.
Thank you, Chair, to do this as well. I just want to say thank you for your presentation. I think we've got a lot to learn, and I would certainly welcome a closer interaction with you. I think we're going to need a lot more time, not even if it's not in the committee, for us to get to grips with this. And I'm just so delighted that we now have a committee which has a ministry and has staff so that we can actually implement, because I think it's quite shameful that we have been at the lead in South Africa or as the country signing all these conventions but not following up. So we have got this status, but we are actually letting ourselves down. And if we as a committee can make change the situation, it would be really good. Perhaps I could just ask that you let us have your contact details, telephone numbers, cells and so on, and of your researchers as well, so that we can make use of your abilities. But thank you. I look forward to a good partnership.
Thank you, Judith, for your presentation on treaties. I, as I said, we are all new here. I have a lot of questions in my head, but one question that I would like to ask you, your opinion on what really causes the delay in reporting the treaty. And as you mentioned, there are quite few of them that hasn't been reported. What can you advise us so that we shouldn't as behind as you have just said? And then the second question is you talked about torture, and you mentioned that South Africa not criminalized torture. My question is, can you still sign the treaty even if you don't have it criminalized? Can you still sign the treaty? And I think that let me ask only those two for now. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank Judy too for the presentation, because she found it very interesting. And I think yesterday too, our researchers made us aware of certain things. And the chairperson alerted them to get certain reports for us that we could question those reports. But I think it is a lot of work. When it came to the torture, Judy, I just made two notes there. You know, to find out whether this really falls under torture. Because in the news at the moment, it's that journalists in Sudan, that war tanks, and she's going to be lashed. You know, they lash them according to according to religion, their culture. Although there is an argument that you won't find any lashing within the Quran itself. And then the other is the female mutilation, you know, at the bottom. And then when it comes to the International Convention, for the protection of all persons from enforced disappearance. Do we find the woman and child trafficking, the trafficking was in that convention? Because we didn't read it. And just to commend Chairperson on yesterday, you know that I think it's a lot of work, because I'm looking now at the researchers, but I'm looking at you, because I'm speaking through you, that I should see what was not signed. And then we already know the few that should be reported on that have to come to us. And then we have to get a strategy, because it's a lot of things a person is looking at here. What strategy we can put into place that we can, you know, just scan through those that we need to. And then I would like to ask Judy, too, when it comes to these treaties, do these treaties fall under the presidency, you know, all the treaties, or do you as human rights report to it, or do the different departments report and send it to, you know, the different the focus group departments? Do they look at the reports and then send it to the presidency, you know, things like that? Because we're not sure, you know, how these things work. Thank you. I just wanted to, actually, the lady covered me partly. I just wanted to know, as Human Rights Committee, what do you really do to protect the rights of the most vulnerable, like what you have said just now? And like she said that it was your first report, what were you still waiting for? And I should think that it's worrying me a lot, because the most vulnerable, the disabled people, that's my worry. I just wanted to know what have you been waiting for all this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members. And the presenters. My question is, how does one access these documents in order to know the content of these treaties? Because I think that is very important, especially for members of this committee. Secondly, you have mentioned that this committee should push for ratification of these treaties that have not been ratified yet. I would like to know, Chairperson, that what do we do in the case where a treaty impacts on other committees as well? And lastly, what mechanism do you use to promote awareness in the communities about these treaties? Thank you, Chair.
Judy, just before you answer, what causes the delay in the ratification of a treaty?
Thank you, and thank you very much for those questions. For a new committee and people preferencing questions where this is very new to us, let me assure you, you've asked very, 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 very good questions, and I think questions to the point. I think some questions as well where I think there's more the need for engagement with Foreign Affairs and the Human Rights Commission, because on some of these issues they are precisely the kinds of issues we also engaging with Foreign Affairs, also trying to understand, for example, where are the delays, why are there delays, and I really do believe, because it's now an issue which appears to be affecting all the treaty bodies, that this is not just an issue of, for example, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights not being ratified. We had a meeting, in fact, just last week with the Department of Foreign Affairs, and it would appear that what has happened then, it goes to one of the questions as well, which was asked, what happens when it's other committees, is the main challenge with the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. It spans across so many government departments. And what tends to happen with the treaty bodies is once they are signed and ratified, they are assigned to a particular government department, which then takes responsibility for that treaty body and thus takes responsibility for the drafting of reports, okay? And it would appear that up until now that government has been unable to find a home for the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. And it really does raise, I think, the issue both for this committee but for government as well as to start asking questions and exploring, is there perhaps not a need to create some kind of unit, central place? There can be debates amongst all the relevant people as to whether it be in the presidency, the planning commission, a particular government department. Those are issues that can be ironed out. But is there not a need maybe to find some kind of central coordinating body which would have the sufficient powers and ability to request the information that is needed? Because what you find with so many of the treaty bodies, you can't just give it to one government department and think that that government department has got all the information. If you take both torture, CAT, and CERD, the elimination of racial discrimination, what has come up in both of those reports and where the committees have requested further information from South Africa is on issues of xenophobia, of treatment of asylum seekers, documentation. That's home affairs. It's come up under both. So I really do think that this is an issue which government needs to grapple with. And I think it's going to be potentially for this committee, and I think for the ministry, it's something to be flagged in terms of, should the ministry maybe be a home for some of these treaty bodies? That could be a question as well. I think these are all discussions and conversations that actually need to take place. And also, how is this committee going to interact with other parliamentary committees? I mean, I can remember very clearly coming to the Joint Monitoring Committee. They were very, very interested in the Commission's Right to Basic Education report, and Commissioner Tom Mintoff and I came and briefed the committee on that report. But there's also an Education Portfolio Committee in Parliament. So I think that is something which is going to have to be negotiated. It's going to have to be navigated, but certainly there is a role, a very strong role, I think, for this committee to play and to carve out. And certainly a lot of these questions need to be answered. Again, in terms of what causes delays, that again is something which I think Foreign Affairs would be best placed to answer, to really try and understand. Is it a lack of capacity? Is it because there's no designated person? Is it because people just don't know how to write the reports, because we've never written these reports before? Now, that is the situation. The UN will provide technical assistance. They will provide training to relevant government officials to actually assist them in the drafting of these reports, okay? The question of what is the role of the Human Rights Commission? It is, as the Human Rights Commission, at an international level, we are regarded as a national human rights institution. We are independent of government. We are independent of civil society. And therefore, this is, again, quite a new, fast-developing area at an international level. But the expectation is that as a national institution, we draft our own separate independent report and submit that to the UN. Independent and separate of both civil society and government, it is utterly frowned upon by the committees at the UN for a national human rights institution to draft the report on behalf of government. That is very frowned upon.
Then come to government at any stage, or you just have the right to send it without the government seeing it.
The commission can certainly send a report if it wants to, direct to the UN, okay? Sometimes with our reports, and it would depend, even with some of our public hearing reports, we would send it to the relevant government department and say, please comment, you know. Certainly, though, as a national human rights institution, we recognize that we have an enormous responsibility when it comes to drafting these reports. Because what, as a national human rights institution, we say in those reports is taken very seriously at an international level. Often taken more seriously, for example, than a report from an NGO. And therefore, we have to exercise extreme responsibility and ensure that what is contained in that report is accurate. But certainly as an independent institution, it may mean we're not always in the popularity sticks. We may say things, but we can agree to differ on certain issues. But that is our independent role guaranteed to us in terms of the Constitution. If something needs to be said, then we can say it. But it's certainly not incumbent upon the Commission to say anything in a dramatic or hysterical fashion. We have to be very, very responsible and measured about what it is that we said because it's taken so seriously. So certainly it would depend on the report. It would depend on the content of the report in terms of whether it was first sent to a government department or whether it is sent direct to the UN. I think there again, that also makes up the argument for why it certainly would make sense to have some kind of sort of central coordinating unit or body or place situated somewhere in government, because it certainly makes it very tricky for the Commission to negotiate government and work out exactly who we should be speaking to on all these different issues as well. I think it would assist Parliament, it would assist this committee, it would assist the Commission and all the CNI, that I think everyone, if we knew exactly where you go to speak on these issues, and it would certainly make the sharing of information a lot easier as well amongst all of us.
Thank you. I'm Patty Duncan. I just want to ask a question. The Commission is accountable to National Assembly and needs to report, once a year or at a yearly basis. What efforts do the Commission make to actually say to the leaders, you're slipping up on very important treaties and conventions and all of it. Are you really bringing it out enough so that leadership realize the importance of ratifying or signing these and even the reports?
Okay, I think that falls in well with like where we are at the moment. In terms of doing work on treaty bodies, within the Commission, in the past it was quite ad hoc, all over the place, in terms of how this Commission has been coordinated within the Commission. So we are now into our third year within the Commission, where we have got a dedicated program which is linked with the parliamentary program, dealing with this, so that it's centralized within the Commission, so that we can carry out our work in a far more strategic, integrated fashion, rather than it just being on an ad hoc basis. And perhaps just to mention, we are the only Human Rights Commission that we are aware of that has a dedicated unit for treaty bodies. And certainly many of the other national human rights institutions are looking towards us in terms of best practice, in terms of seeing that you ought to have at least a dedicated unit. We are a very small program, but at least there is this dedicated, coordinated unit within the Commission. In terms of what we do, because this is long-term, ongoing work, what we started doing, you'll notice, for example, when we report to the Justice Committee and we engage with the Justice Committee, we raise these issues. If we go to the other committees at the moment, we're hoping to be invited to some of the committees, like particularly like ones that would be most relevant for torture or economic and social rights. We would like to go to those committees and speak to them directly. But what we do each year now, and this will be the second or third year running that we would have done it, in our annual report, you'll see there is an actual table which we put into the report, okay? And we actually got this idea from the Ugandan Human Rights Commission, because they do this, because we share ideas amongst each other as commissions. They do this. They put a table in their annual report which sets out which treaty bodies we've signed, which ones we've ratified, where we are in terms of reporting, where it is, why it is that we're outstanding. We also have, we engage via correspondence, via having meetings with foreign affairs to try and understand where some of those delays are. And one of the more exciting things we do, and which we will certainly make available to this commission, is what we call our Human Rights Development Report. And this year, I believe you've got a copy. This is I think it still has to go through one final edit. It's not yet published, but we provided it for you today because we get excited about this publication. What we do on an annual basis is, as a commission, we started bringing out a document called the Human Rights Development Report, where we look at key areas of human rights, and we try and reflect on the year which has passed from January to December. And we do that in terms of the international treaty bodies. So if you'd like to get up to speed very quickly as to what's happening out there in terms of treaty bodies, read this chapter, okay, if there's one thing you read, okay. But we've also, though, tried to make it very interesting. We try and link, for example, what has happened at an international level, what is contained in the treaty bodies, because they can be quite difficult just to sit and read and negotiate all the legal language. But we try and link that to events which have hit the media in South Africa during the year. So throughout the year, we are collecting information, and then at the end of the year, we decide what to put in it. So, for example, last year began quite dramatically with the Skillock shooting, the incident at the Free State University, and then in May, the outbreak of the xenophobic violence. All very, very relevant to the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, some of the recommendations that have been made to South Africa in terms of what we could do. In terms of, as well, there can sometimes be a very fine line between what is a hate crime and what is torture. There is a torture bill circulating within the Justice Department, but certainly we've seen this prevalence of hate crimes, be it xenophobia, be it black lesbian women targeted in townships, particular aspect of hate crime we've seen in this country, okay? There certainly is a need for us to be looking at issues around hate crimes legislation, torture legislation. So we really take these incidences which people can really relate to. You saw them on the news, you read about them in the newspaper, and we link them then to the international conventions, really to make it alive. So it isn't just Geneva and Mont Blanc and the snow and the chocolates. It's actually South Africa and what is happening here. In terms of, I'm just trying to finish up here, I've gone into a lot of the reporting issues. Torture, see this committee is big on torture. That's good. We do a lot of work around torture within the commission. We've got what we call our whole Section 5 committee. We have partners with the Judicial Inspectorate, the Independent Complaints Directorate. We have experts from the Association for the Prevention of Torture from Geneva who sit on that committee. They fly out for the meetings. So there's quite a lot of work that we're doing sort of behind the scenes, and we would like to see that torture bill coming to Parliament. We'd like to see the UPCAP ratified and the National Preventative Mechanism set up. So when people say, what is the Commission doing? Can we sit here for the next week and I can tell you what the Commission is doing? It's just like you're getting a sliver today of what it is that the Commission does. But just in terms of torture, circumcision, a big debate. There is a very small organization in South Africa called No Circ. They have come to the commission on quite a few occasions with their materials, and they would argue very strongly, and they will make out the argument, that circumcision is a form of torture. So there are people who have that view. Many of us know that circumcision is practiced in many parts of Africa. It's practiced amongst Muslim people. It's practiced amongst Jewish people. There are people who make arguments that it's beneficial in terms of the spread of HIV/AIDS. There are so many debates around circumcision. I think the question where we should be going more is maybe the manner in which it is done and whether the deaths and some of the treatment which is meted out, to what extent do parents ever send their child to be circumcised, to become a man, to die? And how do we prevent that from occurring? And I think that is an engagement which one needs to have with the traditional leaders in provinces like the Eastern Cape, Free State, I think up in Northwest. There is provincial legislation which regulates many of these circumcision schools. So it's more questions about are the circumcision schools, are they registered, are they allowing the medical doctors who come in to do the checks, what is being used. As women, we should not be speaking about this.
We had a visit from the East, from Gauteng to visit to this type of committee to visit circumcision schools. And they said the women have to go on something else. So we took the women to social institutions, and only the men went to the school. So they're not going to allow you in. And they put you out of these debates. Yes, I was put out. Don't worry.
Very, very many interesting issues in terms of culture, traditions, exclusion. We've even had debates just in the Human Rights Commission, and many of the men won't tell us what happens, so I can't even answer the question for me. but certainly, I think a lot of issues in terms of just tradition and culture and, what it is that one takes from these processes and what it is that one can see that they are carried out in a way that does not infringe human rights but actually upholds the Constitution. Trying to see, I know there's concern about the Disability Convention and the report there, which will be due in May 2010. I think there everyone is sort of playing the sort of wait and see game a bit, because that committee is still forming itself in Geneva. It's still drafting its rules. It's still drafting its processes. So it is all very, very, very new. Certainly in terms of the commission, Once again, we formed one of these other, another Section 5 committee. We have representatives from the disability sector on it, from academia on it. We also very fortunate to have a Harvard disability professor. He's an expert in this area, very involved in the drafting of the convention, Professor Michael Stein, who joins us for our meetings. And we're really looking there at what it is that South Africa ought to be doing, but looking more specifically at what is the role of the Human Rights Commission. We cannot take on government's role. We cannot do government's work. So what is the specific unique role, given the size of the commission, with less than 200 employees spread across 9 provinces and a budget of 68 million rands a year, what is the role of the commission? What is it that we do, okay, to ensure that this convention gets rolled out? And what we have done thus far, and we can make it available to this committee as well, is we've drafted what we call a disability convention toolkit. It's this wonderful, it really is a box of tools. It's got in there, it's got workshops for targeted audiences, and we have chosen educators in terms of inclusive education for them to understand the importance of inclusive education. It has got a section in there for employers or for recruitment agencies or trade unions to understand the importance of ensuring that persons with disabilities are not excluded in the workplace, but they are included. I'm sure the committee must know that in terms of employment equity, we are falling short, even within government, not reaching the 2% target. We have got a lot to do in this area. So to create that awareness of, it's not only because employment equity legislation says you must do this, not only because the South African Constitution says you must do this, it's because the whole world says, this disability convention says this is what you should be doing. And we've also got a section aimed at caregivers. I think very often we forget about the people who care on a daily basis, some people 24 hours a day for persons with disabilities. And often in those particularly vulnerable situations, that is where abuse can take place. And so just to look at in terms of the feedback we have got from this toolkit is just this enormous sense of pride and added dignity to the work that these caregivers do. For them to know this is not just a job, this is just not what I do. This is what I walk in here. I'm also upholding rights, I am promoting rights. And it's quite wonderful to run these workshops with caregivers. And then also just talks and PowerPoint presentations, and there's a whole lot of tools on that toolkit. We hope that we'll be able to add additional tools into the toolkit for people to use. But that certainly is a toolkit. It's available on our website. We also want to distribute it sort of to our other African NHRIs across the continent. There are quite a few toolkits and documents that have been produced on it. But I think this is a long, long-term project that we're involved in terms of dealing with the rights of persons with disabilities. This isn't going to be something overnight now that we have signed the convention. So it's very important for the Commission in terms of positioning itself, using its scarce resources, being aware of what is important to persons with disabilities. What are the most immediate issues? What are the most immediate barriers? What are the issues that civil society is working on? And how do we have these collaborative relationships to be able to strengthen each other with the ultimate goal of really protecting and promoting human rights for people? So that's in terms of disability. In terms of reporting, who knows what's going to happen come May 2010, but I think we should be prepared. We may suddenly be saying that we should have done a report, and we should be thinking about that, and certainly within the commission we are starting to think about that and what it is that we would need to do in terms of that. In terms of just getting more documents, more information, we received a wonderful new document just recently from the International Service for Human Rights. They are a fantastic international NGO based in Geneva, and they bring us some really, really useful documents. And we got this one called Simple Guide to the Treaty Bodies. Really, I don't think as a Human Rights Commission we could do better putting something together. And in fact, we were in the process of putting something together for all our provincial offices, and we decided we actually need to use this. We'll rather add to it. And I think at the back it gives you links all over the place, and once you get onto those UN sites, if you've got access to the internet, you can just keep on browsing. So if you look at that in conjunction with our Human Rights Development Report, and then there's just so much more information. If there's anything in particular you'd really like to explore, you can certainly contact the parliamentary program, and we could certainly sort of point you on your way in terms of going off and exploring or telling you where information is. Okay, are there any more questions?
Thank you so much for the answers. But I can tell you, for this committee, it would take us to be very unpopular, which would be fine, to go to departments like the very department that you are dealing with, the Women Ministry, and just checking with them and saying that South Africa has been a signatory to this convention. Why hasn't 1, 2, 3 not done? And we go to social development and we do the same. We go to health, we do the same. It should take us to be unpopular, but that's fine. And also just to check within the departments as to whether they have somebody in the department that is dedicated to this type of work that deals just with conventions and treaties. Because you never hear departments talking about these things. You never hear. Well, you want to say something?
Yes, Chair. I wanted to please, I wasn't sure whether we even allowed this, but now that you've asked the questions that you've asked, I wanted to ask a question that will also just give a bit of information. The one question which I thought would be important for the committee to know from Judy, which I am asking, is the problem of the South African Human Rights Commission. Sometimes you get a sense that people don't take the commission seriously, partly because they don't know the work, as you were saying before, the need for the awareness raising. But the one thing that I am very concerned about is what looks like a lack of teeth. And I just think that it's very important to have the society, South African community, know what's going to become of them if they don't do certain things, if they don't comply. That's the first thing. The second thing linked to that is that really I believe that when we should have a reward and punishment system. Those that do well should be rewarded. Those that don't do well, it's just carrot and stick kind of thing. And linked to that question, I was trying to see, is the South African Human Rights Commission designing any scorecards, for instance, that we would use, which is one of the things that in the new ministry we would definitely want to put together, and we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. So the final thing then related to the question that you raised just now, Chairperson, is just to say that we have seen in the department a need, first of all, to set some stiff strategic objectives for ourselves for this particular work. And in line with that, if you look at our structure in all of the four programs, we are setting a dedicated component headed by a chief director, which is specifically whose purpose is to facilitate the domestication of regional, continental, and international instruments. And in that is the function of facilitating the domestication then of those instruments, promoting the ratification, implementation, and reporting on the regional and international instruments pertaining to all four of these programs, and establishing and maintaining a sectoral and intergovernmental relations as well as partnerships with private sector interest groups, strategic partners, and democratic institutions to promote this kind of work. I'm leaving out the advocacy work because it sits in a different chief directorate, but this particular work, we have seen a need to actually create the capacity to actually do this kind of work. And so you are right, Chairperson, you will be bringing out your stick, and I hope your carrots as well to hit us, because I have discovered that there are
these outstanding reports, and it is so embarrassing. I cannot tell you how embarrassing it is for a country that has this human rights culture to actually be slipping out on important things like this. And we will be following up on the reports that are outstanding as part of our work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will certainly, as a committee, be having a closer interaction with the human rights. It's not the end of it today. We'll find time for ourselves so that we can have a closer relationship. And for now, we could just grab a cup of tea for our next presentation.
Thank you very much, Ted. I think my colleagues did just hand out a very short question there. If members would please fill it in for us, because that's the only way we know if what we're doing is beneficial and also how we can ensure that our interaction next time is even better. Thank you.
To know whether what you told us is what we wanted to hear. You want to say something, Robinson?
Yes, thank you. Just to comment again of how excited and enthusiastic I am. I'm delighted to hear what our ACDG is saying. And, you know, yesterday the term was used that we're going to be the new super committee. We do need to have those teeth, and I think we're going to use them. And I think of my previous portfolio, which was finance, we were constantly dealing with international treaties and protocols. And they happened because it was vital, because there was money involved, there was trade involved. We cannot allow ourselves just to continue with this. International protocols and treaties don't matter because they're people, they're soft issues. So let's make us the issues that are we now going to fight. So I'm delighted.